In a culture that so elevates leadership and glorifies leadership, does it ever get discouraging to be in a second chair role and just accepting that that's what you're called to?
Yes, it can. And I'll be honest with you, it has, because I'm not a perfect second chair leader. I think part of it is driven by the fact that we hear over and over again, you can be more, you can do more, you just gotta go to this next level and then you're going to have it. And we don't communicate enough, I don't think, that contentment can be found serving well and just staying put at that level.
Welcome to Church 307, Wyoming's online church. We are glad that you are here. It is becoming fall on the plains of Wyoming and getting colder out, but inside our hearts are as warm as ever. Would you please hit the like, subscribe, and share this with your friends so that we can share the warmth that is coming from this.
Is it just because of the coffee or because I'm sitting next to you?
I think it's the pumpkin spice that just is everywhere that you walk.
Radiating heat.
It's like Starbucks, grocery stores, pencil shops. They all have pumpkin spice. Everything.
That's what it is.
Grant, hit it.
Yep, yep. Send it.
Yeah, it is a pumpkin spice day. Mike, you look spicy.
Thank you. I feel spicy.
How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. To those of you who are tuning in on YouTube or on any of the streaming platforms that you could be using today, we have a guest that is somebody who has played a major role not only in my development of a pastor, but in the development of many pastors' careers and throughout his career has just played a major role in our denomination and in our district. And so I am so happy to have Wayne Muller. You say Muller, right?
I do.
Wayne Muller on the podcast today. I went to school with a bunch of Muellers. They always said Mueller, but they...
It's like Bueller, but Mueller, and this is
spelled Muller. It the same way, but you say Muller.
They just get it wrong.
They get it wrong. You're right. Okay.
It's the accent that they're struggling with.
So Wayne is currently, you're kind of serving in two roles right now, right? You're pastoring there in Watford City. And then you are also a district superintendent for the district, correct?
That is correct. Yep. Both roles, both part-time and currently okay. I'm both serving with younger leaders than I've ever served under.
Okay. Yep. And you have pastored before that in many different cities, mostly all around the northern Midwest, correct?
Correct. Right. Yep. Yep. I've only been in the Northwest District, and I've only been in really connected with churches as far as a pastoral leader in the church, just in North Dakota and South Dakota.
Okay. And you are not slowing down anytime soon. You're just still running.
I slowed down for about 3 or 4 months, about 3 years ago. And yeah. I decided after I got my desk cleared off and my files rearranged, I had too much time on my hands. So I wanted to do something else.
Nice.
Well, we are happy you did. And today we're going to talk about followership and what it looks like for us to be followers while leading or leaders while following. And I've learned more on this topic from Wayne than anybody else. I'd like to begin by reading a quote, one of Leonard Sweet's quotes. He says, "God does not ask if we are able. God asks if we are available. And the weakness we offer him, he turns into a strength." I think so often we say, "I will follow you, God, if I can call the shots, or if I get to get the recognition, or if I get to be in charge." We kind of expect that we're going to get our way if we follow God, but there's somewhat of a surrendering process that happens when we choose to follow God, in which we say, no longer is it going to be about me pursuing my dreams. Instead, I'm going to lay my agenda aside and I'm going to take up God's agenda. So in a sense, in following Christ, we are, he is inviting us to lead, to be leaders in the world while following him. And so Wayne, when he talks about this idea of following and being a leader, you often use the terms first chair leader and second chair. First chair is kind of the person calling the shots, and second chair is the person following that. Honestly, before you started using that language, I had never heard anybody else use those terms in that way. Is that original to you, or?
Mike, that's a good question. I don't think it's original with me, although it's been resonating with me since probably about the mid-1980s. That was before I actually joined full-time ministry in a local church and was involved in a retail business. And I had to struggle with the fact that I wasn't the person in charge. Even though I wanted to call the shots, and I would have been better maybe if I called the shots, I wasn't the person to call the shots. And so it was really a journey that I had to travel and kind of repeat some steps in over a period of months or years. And then about the same time as I was reading through the scriptures, there were guys like Barnabas in the book of Acts, who was never designed to be the first chair leader or the one calling the shots, but did just an outstanding job of supporting and surrounding and elevating other very effective first chair leaders. And if you go back even further in the scriptures, Joshua did that with Moses. I mean, Moses would get the direct command from God. Moses would pass it on to Joshua, and Joshua saw that it was carried out. And so it's really critical in being a second chair leader that you realize and remind yourself almost daily, I'm not the first chair leader. Because if you think you are and you're operating from the second chair, that's not going to work.
Yeah. It's such a biblical idea. We look at the advice that Paul gives us in Romans 13 to honor or even obey the authority of the government, which most of us kind of go the opposite way with that and just do a lot of criticizing. Or when Jesus says that whoever wants to be the leader among you must serve, and Jesus taught us how to serve. And so it's not either a leader or a servant. It is, what role am I meant to play in this whole thing? So how do we then relate that to the way that we serve each other? Because I can make the connection, okay, I need to serve God or I need to serve Christ. How then do I make a connection between that idea to I need to serve another human or somebody else who has been called to be my leader?
That's another really good question. And I think I would begin by saying that as a second chair leader, and that's the way I classify myself in both current roles and assignments, I have to practice that servant leadership at home every day. Mm. And by that, I mean I need to have practical and tangible ways to serve my wife, my adult kids, my grandkids, my neighborhood where I live. Because the way I am in private will always come out in the way I lead in public. And if I'm not a servant on a 24/7 basis, I won't be a servant to my first chair leader when I'm on the clock working for that organization or for that leader. And so my go-to wonderful passage would be in Philippians chapter 2, where Paul talks about how Jesus took on the attitude and the persona of a servant and made little of himself. He humbled himself and became obedient. And so just reminding myself, I don't get to call the shots. I don't get to make the major decisions. And how can I do that with the humble attitude like Christ would have me to have? And how can I do that with gladness of heart so that it becomes a joy and not a burden or a task that I just have to do?
With that, because you have students that you do interviews with for what's it called, the ordination?
EBMD.
EBMD. I was thinking why you're saying that, because like in your household, I mean, you're serving alongside your wife, but you're kind of a first chair leader within your house, maybe. Or at least I would think. It's kind of more of a question, I guess. But in life, your students are second or third chair leaders, but at some point they're hoping to become a first chair leader of their church. They might already be a first chair leader inside their house, but then when they get into a different spot, like how do you, I like the servanthood aspect you're talking about. Like how do you train people to, in some spots in life, you're going to be a first leader, in some spot, first chair leader, in some spots in life, you're going to be a second chair leader. Like how do you communicate that if I'm not understanding it correctly, like maybe you could explain it to me.
I think you have a pretty good understanding, or you're setting up a pretty good scenario. I think as we go throughout our day to day, our week to week, month to month, we move in and out of the first chair, second chair, but I'm talking primarily about where we give the prime time of what we call our calling or our purpose, and what that looks like. I think in order to do a second chair well, you have to understand that on a very limited basis, are you ever in the first chair? For example, over the last 25 years, I have been put into the first chair probably 3 or 4 times, either due to a sabbatical by a leader or a health crisis on the part of a leader. And I have to realize, okay, now in these moments or in these days, I'm in the first chair. But when that first chair leader rises again, I need to just as easily blend back into that second chair so that there's no competition for the first chair. And so I think we have to look at, and the two words I would use is, how can my ministry as a second chair complement and complete my first chair leader's role? And where does it compete? And I need to stay away from the competition and focus on the completing or the complementing of the role that I bring, the gifts that I bring to the table. How can I do that in the best way so that there's a clear designation that person is the first chair leader, and I and any other second or third chair leaders are not the leaders.
Wow.
We have leadership in our areas. Mitch, like you mentioned on the ministerial development process, I was given a lot of leadership, almost bordering on first chair leadership there. But the final decision was never left with me. I knew that there was somebody above me that had a final say over what I was doing and performing to carry out those functions. Mm-hmm. And my go-to had to be, I'm a second chair leader, even though it looks like I'm the first chair.
Gosh. In a culture that so elevates leadership and glorifies leadership, does it ever get discouraging to be in a second chair role and just accepting that that's what you're called to?
Yes, it can. And I'll be honest with you, it has. Because I'm not a perfect second chair leader. I think part of it is driven by the fact that we hear over and over again, you can be more, you can do more. You just got to go to this next level and then you're going to have it. And we don't communicate enough, I don't think, that contentment can be found serving well and just staying put at that level. Once I understood where my spiritual gifts were and continue to be, and where my leadership level is and is not. For example, I am not a creative, dynamic, vision-casting first chair leader. I couldn't be. I would cripple whatever ministry or organization I would be leading, because there would be people smarter and more creative in the room than I am. And it wouldn't be long and they would say, we've got the wrong person at the first chair. And so I think, first of all, you have to know where God has gifted you. And part of that comes from, what are other people saying about the second chair leadership that you're already doing? And then letting those affirmations be the reward, the takeaway for the day, to say, Mike realized that was done well and it was finished, or Mitch saw that and it was done well. But when we compare ourselves to what other more capable leaders can do in different domains or different areas of influence, we can easily set ourselves up for both discouragement and great disappointment.
We
really have to watch out and not do that. For example, my current role on the district leadership team, I'm one of about 4 or 5 second chair leaders. And the others all have very unique and different gifts from mine, but I'm the only one that has the gifts that I have.
Right.
And so for this season, I've been invited to sit at that table and to exercise those gifts and to use my leadership influence in the best ways that I can. But it can be, here's another thing that I don't think first chair leaders know enough. Oftentimes when you're in the second chair, the only kudos you get can come from the first chair.
watched. Yeah.
And if they're not on the lookout for that and they don't watch and return some of that and just say at the end of a big push on a project or a strenuous ministry season to say, we wouldn't have gotten here had you not done X, Y, or Z. And that goes a long ways towards filling that void that we all have to be appreciated and noticed and valued. And so, yeah, I would encourage first-year leaders, watch for genuine ways that you can help your second-year leaders avoid that anonymity.
I think one of the reasons why I have in the past been discouraged in second chair roles that I've been placed in is one of my weaknesses is contentment. Like I don't ever feel content. I'm always wanting to charge the next hill or take on the next challenge. Like I'm just always wanting to push forward. And when I'm in a second chair role, I feel a little bit like I'm waiting. Like I'm needing that first chair person to take a step. So then I can finally take a step. Is there ways from a second chair that you can continue to pursue ideas and goals without feeling like you're stepping on the feet of the first chair?
Yeah, I believe there are, and I believe I've discovered maybe two or three of those. I'll tell you one first of all that I wouldn't encourage you to do. This would be a mistake that I made a number of years ago. Not under the current leadership I'm currently serving with, but an earlier one. And we were having a team building day, and we were talking about how we were going to deploy the team members we had and who was going to be doing what. And I just blurted out a really, what I thought, really bright idea of what would help this person we were discussing really, really hit the target. And it came across so bold and so brash that it just took all the oxygen out of the room. And my idea was shot down, and I felt humiliated and embarrassed, and I determined I would never do that again. So my approach would be, in this day, would be rather to ask one or two very thoughtful but leading questions with an intention in mind. I'm asking this question because I want us to go to this conversation. And so to creatively ask a good question and then say, would it be possible if... Or I wonder how it would work out if we attempted to go this direction, so that your first chair leader is not directly challenged, but realizes that you've been investing some mental horsepower to think and to say, I've got something to offer. Are you ready to hear what I have to say? Or is this not the time? And I think the second part of that then is you have to know the timing. If your first chair leader has been in an intense period of unusual overload, it's not a good idea to come up with a new idea. That season needs to dissipate a little bit so they have a chance to be open to a new idea or a little bit altered direction. So being aware of how your first chair leader is doing, which a second chair gets to do, you get to see a lot of things right up close. You get to see when your first chair leader makes a mistake or what looks like a mistake to you, or when they're being challenged by another strong person who really doesn't have a seat at the table, and you can offer something from a different perspective because you're not directly involved in either that conflict or that leadership decision, but you can give input.
First chair leaders are flawed people, like all people are, and first chair leaders disappoint their second chair a lot. I know that's true. And so, has there been a season in your life where you were, maybe you lost confidence in, or you were discouraged by a first chair leader? And if so, how do you kind of push through that? And how do you react if you begin to lose confidence in your first chair leader?
Wow, that's a tough question. I want to be careful with my word selection here because it's just critical. The older I get, I think the wiser God is helping me to become in what I express. I think, and I believe that the first right step when that situation is developing and that scenario was forming is to take time to stop and pray and say, okay, where have I missed it? In other words, do an internal examination to say, where has my heart been? Have I just been looking for my leader to disappoint me? Have I been watching for that little mistake that he or she made that I didn't support? Or have I been mumbling to another second chair leader or somebody else on the team when I should have been affirming my leader? So I think doing an internal evaluation first to say, okay, how much of this is my responsibility? What can I do, or what could I have done to keep this from happening? And then secondly, to be honest, and if I have been guilty of anything there, to be enough of a leader to go to my first chair and say, hey, this is what I've been thinking or saying, and I was wrong, and I apologize for that. Mm. Wanting to serve your first chair leader is a wonderful way to restore the relationship. Now, he or she may never get back to become that first chair leader that I need them to be, but if I get to that point and I'm convinced of the point that really my heart was clear, what I did was because of what God was motivating me to do, but I still can't support that first chair leader, then I need to look for a nice way to write my resignation note. And I need to remove myself from the team, or at least offer to remove myself from the team. The first chair leader is there for a reason, and they have been selected, chosen, been granted authority either by another leader higher up or by the organization they're leading. And whatever authority I have has been granted to me by the first chair. And if I'm not supporting, I'm the one that needs to look at something different. So I would do an internal examination. I would pray and ask God for next steps. And then if we couldn't get on the same page with caring conversation, I would be the one to resign and move on. I've never had to do that, but I have gotten to the place where I had to object to a decision that a first chair leader was making, and realize that I felt so passionately about it that if he wanted to go ahead and move ahead with that decision, that I was going to remove myself from the team. Not as a threat, but just to say, you won't have to worry about me. I won't challenge you on this again, but I am challenging you now, and either we can adjust and go on together, or I will be the one that will depart from the team. So
Wayne, it just sounds like a ton of humility is what it sounds like. Like just prayful, wise humility on your part. What are some pitfalls then for second chair leaders? Because like one thing you just expressed was talking behind first chair's back, like sowing discontent among the troops as second chair. Like I think that's a pretty obvious misstep as a second chair leader. Are there other pitfalls that second chair leaders can fall into?
Yes, I think so. At least if I can use myself as an example. One of the pitfalls you can watch out for is recognizing that when your first chair is getting credit for something, you could raise your hand and say, hey, wait a minute, I did most of that. I should be getting that credit, you know, or you might be, if you're a person that has a lot of charisma and a lot of following, you might say, you know what, I really should have more stage time. Wherever the stage is, I really should be on the platform where people can see me, because after all, look who I am, you know, those things. I think a couple of things more subtle. Watch out for people who look like they really appreciate the team, but they keep trying to give you little bits of nitty-gritty bits of information that they want you to do something about. I call that poison.
Sure.
And if we allow ourselves either to listen to or to do anything with that poison, other than to direct that person, you need to go talk to our leader and I will go with you to make sure that that happens, but I'm not going to communicate that for you. So people that look like they have good intentions but actually want to undermine the team, we have to watch out for those. Not everybody that looks like they have the right attitude and motivation for being connected to us are looking out for what's good for our overall mission and organization. They don't understand our purpose. They don't understand the intensity of the things that we deal with and the sensitivity of the people that we're leading.
I think one of the things that has been most discouraging to me as a pastor is there are so often people who come to me and say, here's how you should be leading the church, or here's a ministry that you should be doing, or here's an idea that you should adopt. And man, that voice is just constant. Everybody has all these ideas about what you should be doing and where you should be leading the church. And I try to do my best to be open-minded and to hear all that input. I don't believe for a minute that all the revelation that God has for our church is going to come directly to me. I believe that God can bring that through other people. But there are times when we come to the conclusion that that is not the direction that God is leading us.
Right.
And people so often in that instance will choose to either back away and disappear, but more often they just leave the church. Well, I told you should do this and you didn't do it, and so I'm leaving. And I think that's been one of the most discouraging ways that people leave, is because I don't do it the way they think that I should do it, then they don't feel like they can be a part of the ministry. And I can see that kind of discontentment coming from second chair, first chair relationships a lot, because my second chair is Paul Boffman, and he's incredible at it. Like, I can't complain for a second, but there have been times in our relationship where he's felt like we should go one direction, and I felt like I could, we needed to go a different direction. And we've been able to come to a conclusion together in our, in leading together as a team, that we have always come to a conclusion that I think we agree on. But what do you do at a time when you just can't agree? Like, the first chair thinks we should do this, and maybe it's not an issue of confidence or respect for the first chair. It's just a disagreement in the direction that we should be going.
I think I'll answer that question, Mike, with an illustration that I think might be germane to our discussion at this point. And that being, sometimes it's not necessarily just the difference in opinion between the first chair and the second chair about any particular decision, but rather it might be something to do with timing and how critically time-sensitive the next step is. And there were a couple of occasions where we were working with a couple of local churches and possible transitions on church staffs. And my first chair leader was of the opinion that now was the right time and we should pull the plug or make the decision now. And from my vantage point in the second chair, I encourage us to give it a little more time, sometimes just a month or 30 days, and sometimes maybe like for a 3-month period, just to say there's really nothing more to lose here, but maybe something significant to gain, even if it's just investing in the leader that we're maybe going to have to make a decision about. So just being aware of just the difference in timing, maybe your proclivity to decide now and act in the next 5 minutes versus your second chair's, you know what, let's give that more thought and prayer, then we'll come back and make that appropriate decision at that time.
Yeah. You've referenced Isaac Smith, I guess not in name, but...
That's out of the bag now, though.
So one of the things that I love so much about his leadership is he regularly says to us pastors, he'll block for us. And the amount of confidence that we get knowing that our leader, that the person that is calling a lot of shots in our roles, is somebody who's going to have our back if we make a mistake, if we try something that doesn't work, if we go out on a limb, that if we fail, he's going to block for us. And so I think there's something to be said about that public unity, that behind the scenes, Wes or Isaac could come to me and say, hey, here's where I think you got it wrong. But outwardly, publicly, he is always on my team. And I've kind of tried as hard as I can to have that approach with my team, and to say, when it comes to outsider attack or people disagreeing with the way we do things, I will defend my team always.
Good.
Would you say something to the second chair leaders about how they represent well the team that they're on?
I would say do that enthusiastically, do it publicly, do it often. Don't fake it, because people can identify when you're just using flowery words. But God always gives us insight to see those things that we can give affirmation to and publicly support. And The more you do that, the more you're getting leadership coins in your own pocket as well, because that's what you want your first cheerleader to do for you. And then on those rare occasions, and only ever in private, do you address the concern you have with your first cheerleader. Don't ever do it in front of the team, even if it's a team thing. If it's something between you and the first chair, that needs to be a private conversation so that leader has plenty of room to explain or to defend or to critique back without any other opinions being involved. So always affirm enthusiastically and celebratory in public. Critique quietly and confidentially in the private place. Mm-hmm.
What do you do for yourself in a second chair in order to make sure that you stay in a healthy place in your support of the team and your support of the first chair and in your pursuit of the mission?
Good question. Things that I'm trying to do currently, a good friend of mine told me 25 years ago, leaders are readers. So I read a lot. I listen to a couple of leadership podcasts a week. I'm still a John Maxwell fan, and I've taken a liking to Tom Rainer and his Church Answers podcasts. And then I, in order to keep better connected with the international church and not just in our own denomination, but I do a weekly podcast with a ministry called RUN, R-U-N. And it's an extensive house church ministry around the world, especially in third world countries. Along with that, I try to take care of myself physically. I'm not a runner anymore at my age. I'm a walker, but I try to walk 5 or 6 days out of 7 and get a few miles in every day. I try to get adequate rest. I try to limit the amount of Mountain Dew that I enjoy so that I'm not sapping my strength. And then maybe one of the most valuable to me, and we've just been doing it the last 3 years or so, but just the intimate moments with my wife in Scripture, where we talk about where we've been reading, and then we share in our prayer responsibilities. When I get to a team meeting, I try to speak very little and listen a lot. I need to catch the heart of what my first chair is facing, so that when the agenda is over, I know how I can support and how I can pray, and maybe how my gifts might add to what's being served on the table as far as what we're offering whoever we're serving. Another thing you can do to make yourself sustainable is ask your first chair leader, what is currently on your plate that you don't have to do that I could do?
Oh.
In other words, what is something that you're seeing you need to do, but you wouldn't have to do that, and I could do it because I've got time in my schedule to do that. Those would be some of the things that I do. I use a funky little illustration about the old-fashioned gas gauge that went from E over to F for full, and I try to look at myself a couple times a week and say, okay, where is the needle pointing? And what do I need to do to fill my tank back up? And I've got 4 or 5 things that are personal to me that I say, these things fill my tank, and these other things drain my tank. So I try to avoid the drainers, go to the fillers.
Are there benefits that we've not talked about of being a second chair leader? We've talked a lot about the pitfalls and what makes it difficult and the things you got to watch out for, but are there benefits of being in that second chair?
Yes. One of the biggest benefits the last 5 years is less stress. Mm-hmm. First chair leaders have taken on a whole lot more stress, I think, than they have had in maybe the previous couple of decades prior to that. And so being in the second chair, I don't have the number of decisions coming to me like a first chair leader. And very few people are waiting for me for the big vision picture of what we need to be about and what God is challenging us to do. But on the really tangible side, I get to celebrate the same victory as the first chair gets to celebrate. I get to watch when the team crosses the line. I carried the ball for 5 yards or whatever, and my team scored, and I was a part of that. I get to hear stories of life transformation from people within local churches and how God is transforming leaders in our local churches. I get to hear those life change stories. Another very tangible takeaway for me is I've got time in my schedule that a first chair leader doesn't have. I can linger with another second or third cheerleader that a first cheerleader may not have time to do. And so if I need to spend another couple hours, nobody's waiting for me to do something next. I can linger and learn from that one and add value to that person. I think those are gifts that second chairs get that a lot of people don't get to see.
Yeah. What? I think you or Mike maybe said this earlier, but culture does push, I think, a lot of us to think that we are the beautiful snowflake that the world is waiting for. Mm-hmm. Or like that we should be leaders, that we deserve the leadership. What are, maybe you kind of answered this already, but what is it, people? Is it relationships that you would look to for wisdom to be okay, like with taking a second chair leadership role? Is it your relationship with Jesus? Is it your conversations? Is it your reading? Is it like, what would be some good avenues for someone to look into, to answer the second chair leadership call?
Yeah. Good question. Dan Ryland, who I think just recently stepped down from his leadership role at 12 Stone, has been another, I think, really effective second chair leader in our denomination, and has served under a couple of really high profile, high potential first chair leaders. Dan's book, Confident Leader, would be a good place for an aspiring second chair person. I wouldn't encourage someone to become second chair because they doubt their gifts to be a first chair. They need to be confirmed in their own heart and mind that God is calling them to be a second chair, that they see themselves as being completely fulfilled in serving in the second chair. If they've got first chair gifts and anointings and giftings, go for the first chair. We need strong first chair leaders. We need powerful first chair leaders. But for sure, we need a whole bunch of other second chair leaders that know how to care for people, know how to live a life of integrity and humility and authenticity, so that people can see that it's not a grasping, see how can I get to the next step on the stairway to the top, but to know that this is my landing place. God has given me confirmation. I'm going to stay put there. I think taking your spiritual gifts inventory, going through the Enneagram process will help with that. Just knowing how God has wired you, and then paying attention to what other leaders have to say about the gifts that you bring to the table. God will put it in somebody else's mind and lips to say something to you that will help confirm, I'm going to be the best second chair leader that God has called me to be. And that's really the motivation that I function out of on a day-to-day basis. I can't preach like Wes. I can't preach like Isaac. I can't preach like my former pastor. I don't even like to preach unless they say, hey, I need a Sunday off. Will you come preach? So, you know, you know your gifts. You know what fills your tank. If you're married, listen to your spouse. He or she knows. He or she knows. And then practice it at home. If you can be a servant at home, you can be a servant in the workplace. If you can't do it at home,
amen to that.
Do it in the workplace.
So I think that's so powerful. And I talked to so many people that are discontent in their current situations, whether it's a midlife crisis or some other just feeling of unsettled in their life. And I think often it's because outside voices have spoken to us what we should value and what is important. And culture tells us that the first chair is the most valuable chair, and so we should be going after it. And I think there's value in just being content in what God has called us to play the role that God has called us to play. And so I just want to say thank you to you, Wayne, in allowing me to learn this lesson over the years. Is there any other question that we should have asked that we didn't ask? Any other pieces of advice that you want to give before we end?
I almost hate to call it pieces of advice, but there is a question. There is a question that I use infrequently, because we shouldn't ask it very often. And the question is, what is it like on the other side of me? And if you're serving in the second chair, probably every 2 or 3 years, if your first chair leader remains the same person, you should ask that question. That communicates, okay, I'm delivering what I think you want me to produce and deliver. How is it coming across to you? In other words, am I a help to you? Or my hindrance? Sometimes it's hard for the first year leader to come back and say, you know, you're getting it pretty close, but I wish you would. And yet if you'll take that same attitude of humility and say, what is it like on the other side of me? I think that's a really good question. Once again, that question's not original with me. I only ask about three or four people. I ask my wife every few years, not every week, what's it like on the other side of me? And I've also asked my two adult kids, what's it like on the other side? How am I doing as I grow older as a dad? What is life like when you're on the other side of me? And then don't be defensive, because the people that you're asking care about you a great deal, and they want you to be better and to serve well. Always get up every day with the idea that you can add value to someone else, and you can contribute something to somebody to what somebody is trying to accomplish.
Wow, gosh, Wayne,
that was so helpful. What's your big takeaway?
Wayne's a saint.
I walk away from this conversation just, I need humility.
Yeah, that, when you mentioned the Philippians passage, it's like,
yeah,
I think, yeah, trying to live that out. Living in servanthood, and you're doing a good job, Wayne.
Yeah, and I would also say, if you're watching this today and you say, I want to hear more about that or to contemplate this idea more, there is a book that I would recommend. It's I'm a Follower by Leonard Sweet. And he's kind of just grabbing a hold of this idea that we are all called to be followers in some part of our lives, and primarily we are called to be followers of Christ.
Right.
And we are taking up his agenda and not following our own agenda. We're pursuing his dreams, not our dreams. And that's what it means to make him the Lord of our lives. We surrender to him as Lord. And so in that sense, we are all second chair leaders. Right. And so lean into it.
Yeah, Wayne, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
Your wisdom.
To share with you today. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Mike, thank you for sitting down.
Yes.
And you.
Thank you for sitting in my second chair.
Oh. And all of you sitting down, hopefully not in your driver's seat, driving your car down the road. That would be irresponsible.
Unless you're just listening.
True.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's right. That's okay. We would encourage you to listen. But for those of you watching online, I hope that it was insightful. Yeah. I don't know how it couldn't be. Wayne had some really great stuff in there. That was
powerful.
Yeah, really powerful. So would you please hit the like button, and would you share this to get the content out there? And subscribe to the channel, because information like Wayne's just now, we hope to deliver every Monday, just powerful kingdom stuff. And then if you didn't like it, just hit the thumbs down twice so that you know that it counts.
And as you go, know that Jesus loves you unconditionally, and he died to give you new life.